Hey team, welcome to Rewriting Wellbeing, the Teacher's Health Podcast, the show that helps you thrive and not just survive, both in and out the classroom. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. You are joined as always by me, your host, Charlie Burley, the Teacher's Health Coach. And today I've got another Teacher Talks episode for you. So in this week's episode, I am with the brilliant Ruth from Peachy Wellbeing. Ruth holds a Bachelor of Primary Education degree and this has given her an amazing 19-year career working in mainstream primary schools. During this time, she's worked with many outside agencies such as Autism Outreach, Behaviour Support and CAMS, ensuring that pupils in her care and their parents have the best education and support possible. Over the course of her career, she has had copious amounts of CPD in personal, social and emotional development, behaviour management, philosophy for children, and she holds a certificate in the teaching of PSHE. In both her last role as assistant principal and her current role as head of school, her main aim has always been to provide support to staff in terms of well-being and mental health. She believes there is not enough support out there for teachers, and she has made it her mission to protect, empower and support those within her team to have a positive outlook on life and to grow in confidence to stand up and take back their well-being. And now it's time for her to help others on a bit of a wider scale. In our conversation, we chat about what well-being means to us, the challenges all of those who work in school face, support for ECTs, building boundaries, and having a life outside the classroom. What I really love about Ruth is just how clear she is, but caring with her message, and how she places a real emphasis on empowering individuals to take the right action for them. A really big thank you to Ruth. I really appreciate you coming on, and I think you as an audience are really going to enjoy this one. So without further ado, here is ECT Wellbeing and Living a Life Outside the Classroom with Ruth Damson of PG Wellbeing. Ruth, hello. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening. You okay?
Yeah, good. All good. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine.
Good, good. Well, thank you for giving us your time and for talking through everything that we're going to discuss tonight. I'm really excited for this episode. I think we're going to have a lot of good conversations and there's going to be a lot of good points that come out of it. And I think particularly for ECTs, it's going to be really useful and really practical as well. So that's really exciting. We haven't really done much for ECTs so far. Obviously, all the advice is pretty applicable, but specifically for ECTs, we haven't actually talked to anyone. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be good. And I hope even if they just take one small thing away from it, then it's been worthwhile. Yeah. I think they need as much support as they can get in the early stages of the career. So let's hope it has an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So just to kick us off, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself, you know, who you are, what you do, and a bit about your journey up to this point, if that's okay?
Yeah, no problem. So I'm Ruth and I'm from Peachy Wellbeing. And I've got 20 years of teaching experience at various different stages of teaching. So I've been an early years lead, early years advisor, deputy head, and now head of school. But my main focus has been on wellbeing. In my previous school, I became wellbeing champion because actually wellbeing wasn't at the forefront of the school's development plan. And we all know that if the staff are happy, the school's happy and the children learn more. And that would be one of our key priorities. So because of that, I sort of fell into the role of becoming wellbeing champion and making sure that staff were fundamentally happy. And then I looked wider afield and thought, well, it's not just our school like this. Obviously, there must be lots of schools out there where actually it isn't a priority, or it is a priority in terms of, let's say it's a priority, but actually what goes on behind that to make it the priority. You know, how can we change the culture and the ethos of the school? And then that's where the sort of Peachy Wellbeing came from, really. And it started out as like just sharing some hints and tips to do with wellbeing and how to promote your own wellbeing. And then now it's sort of developed into the coaching aspect of it, where you now support teachers with looking at the lifestyle, looking at the workload and the boundaries that they can put into place to protect their wellbeing and make sure they have a good quality of life, both inside and outside of the classroom.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think it's so valuable that you've had the experience of the leadership positions and things as well. Yeah. Whereas for me, my career never got to that point. So that's always one thing that I'm always short on. Do you know what I mean? I think that experience that you've got there is just invaluable because you understand the sort of, not higher up, but the bigger picture stuff and how to implement action plans and this, that, and the other for schools, which I think is so invaluable.
I think there's, at the moment, there's a sort of culture where, I might be wrong saying this, but some SLT members don't care about wellbeing. Mm-hmm. And just because they're not talking about it all the time, or just because you don't see them proactively doing stuff, doesn't mean that they don't care. Sometimes, you know, there's red tape or there's politics that come into play sometimes. But I think at heart, most SLT people, they do care about your wellbeing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's other factors that stop them doing as much as they probably could. But yeah. I think the culture is changing, and the more we can do as a group together to support that culture changing is the better.
Yeah, absolutely. I talked to Andrew Cowley on the podcast, blimey, start of the year, maybe February time. And he talked, and he spoke at our event in October as well, last October in 2022. And he talked about like a sideways in model of well-being, because you do still hear people sort of pinning the, not the blame, pinning the responsibility for well-being on SLT. And ultimately, yeah, his sort of point was that we should all be equal stakeholders in our well-being. And it, you know, it's almost take away that hierarchy, put it on its side a little bit. And it's a sideways in approach. You know, we're all responsible. We all work together on it, which I thought was quite a nice way to put it. Do you know what I mean?
I think it is. And I think it's about taking the ownership, isn't it? And taking responsibility for actually what you want your vision to be as a teacher, and what you want your vision for your work-life balance to be like, and taking some accountability for that yourself, but also not being afraid to speak up if you think something isn't right in terms of something that impacts on your wellbeing. Go and approach it instead of, you know, moaning about the issue, or, you know, talking to colleagues about the issue. Go to your line manager or go to members of SLT and say, hey, can we look at this and can we address this? They're only human.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes we can be our own. This is me talking from experience as well. I'm not sort of saying this is what teachers are like, but I can think of so many times when I had a problem, but it felt better to go and moan about it in the staff room than to go and address it with the person. I reckon lots of the listeners can definitely relate to that. It feels good, doesn't it, to get that off your chest, but is it helping?
I'm the same. The amount of times I've stood at the photocopier in the past moaning about something. I mean, the photocopier must have known all my secrets about what I thought about stuff at certain school year. But as soon as you shift that mindset and step up for yourself, then other people will start stepping up too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be toxic positivity and positivity and stuff. It's a difficult tightrope to walk, isn't it, sometimes? Yeah. But it's a perspective shift, isn't it?
You know, yeah,
being proactive, really, isn't it? Of right, we're all stakeholders. We've all got a part to play. How can we work together on this? And I think sometimes between teaching staff and non-teaching SLT, sometimes there is in lots of schools still a gap.
Yeah, and I think there is, and I think sometimes it's easy to forget the demands of being a class teacher. You know, the planning, the marking, the prep, the data analysis and things like that, just the day-to-day expectations of being a class teacher. And then when you throw other roles and, you know, other tasks you want them to do into the mix, there's not a lot of time, is there, for them to do that. And I think sometimes when you do step away from teaching to take a more managerial role, you have to keep that in the forefront of your mind. You know, you haven't got that teaching commitment anymore, but actually those people that you are asking to go above and beyond have got it. So there needs to be some leeway, and there needs to be common sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the communication element of that is so important, isn't it? I think we might touch on that today potentially, but it all comes back down to communication, doesn't it?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. So what does, this is a question that I've sort of started to ask people when I'm interviewing them, because it's such an obvious question, but I think it's really interesting and it's quite intriguing. It gives us a bit of a window into you a little bit more. What does well-being mean to you?
Oh, it's just the feeling of, you know, feeling content and feeling happy, and, you know, getting up in the morning and looking forward to going to school, you know, coming home and knowing actually I haven't got the demands of school now, I can live my own life. And it's just that general feeling of happiness and no anxiety and no worry and no stresses. And it's just being able to live a normal life, really. I don't think I can expand on it anymore, because actually well-being is just being. happy, whether that is, you know, emotionally happy, physically happy, all of them put together, just so that you've just got this feeling of, yeah, contentment.
Yeah, absolutely. I was listening back. This sounds very self-indulgent, so bear with me here. I interviewed Adrian Buffoon on this podcast again, start of the year, and I really, really, I love him. He's what he talks about is just so inspiring. He's the Teach Happy guy, really inspiring guy. And I listened back to our episode of the podcast. I skipped over the bits of me talking because I don't like listening to my own voice. But I was listening back to him, and he talked actually. What was quite a coincidence actually. This was only the other day. He talked about pleasure and purpose. And how, like, those two, like having that purpose, whether that's in school or at home. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about nurturing yourself outside the classroom, aren't we? But having that purpose outside of school being so important. And I thought that's, you know, that's quite a nice, like, you know, until recently, I hadn't really thought of that. But I remember him mentioning it.
I think that, you know, working in education and being a teacher in the classroom, it's so demanding, and it takes over your life, and you can quite easily let it, can't you? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you've got this pressure to perform, and you've got this pressure and this like loyalty and sense of duty to the children that are in your care. But you've also got that sense of duty and loyalty to yourself and your family as well. And I think that, you know, no matter what we do in the classroom, whatever, you know, data you get and what progress and what results you get and your achievements in the classroom, you've got to have those achievements outside of school for yourself as well, whether it be, you know, in your family life or in your personal life. You've got to achieve stuff, and you've got to have those memories and that happiness. And I think that actually, when we're talking about well-being, that all impacts, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So I know we chatted about what we're going to discuss tonight before, and we talked about ECTs, didn't we? You know, we said about ECT well-being, and it's going to be a very important topic. We are currently, for most schools, in just the start of the, well, sorry, middle of the second week of the new academic year. So it's a whole new generation of teachers, either first year or second year, who are sort of, you know, going into the classroom and things, and we'll be looking probably online, really, for well-being advice and support and asking around and stuff. So for you, what do you feel some of the main challenges are that ECTs face in those first 2 years?
Well, I've been looking on some forums, and like I run a couple of ECT groups, and the main one is imposter syndrome. You know, there's been quite a few chat threads about I'm not good enough and I don't know what to do, and how will they listen to me? Where can I get this from? And I think they just need to remember that what they've achieved already. You know, they've passed the teacher training degree, they've done a degree, they've done a skip course, they've done ITT. Whatever they've done, they've passed it and they've secured a job. And I think, you know, they can't get carried away. They're not going to be able to do it as soon as they get into the classroom. They'll be able to do basics, but actually we're all developing all the time. We're all learning all the time, and we're all growing. I know in my career, right now, from 20 years ago, I'm a completely different teacher. And that's taken 20 years to shape. So they're not going to be able to walk into a classroom and in a week and a half become all singing, all dancing, and be the best teacher ever. And I think they feel under pressure to be that person. And I think it's actually having the confidence in themselves to take a step back and say, this is what I've achieved. I've now got my own class, and now I'm going to become the teacher that I want to be. So I think it's really important that they have a clear vision of how they want their, you know, their teaching style to be, and how they want their presence in the classroom to be, and having the confidence to develop that and not put any pressure on themselves to achieve anything too soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel that comparison comes in there? Because I know that when I was in my earlier parts of my teaching career, I worked, particularly my first year, with some big characters, let's say. And I found it quite difficult sometimes to have a voice, but I also found myself comparing my displays to other people's displays and this sort of stuff.
Definitely. And I think the main things for ECTs to remember is no two cohorts are the same, no two classes are the same. So why are two teachers going to be the same? Mm. You know, we're all unique in our own ways. We've all got strengths and we've all got areas to develop. We haven't got the same strength. We haven't got the same areas to develop. And I think making those comparisons can be really, really dangerous for them. So they just need to concentrate on themselves. Ask for advice, you know, go and watch other teachers, go and talk to colleagues, use your year group partner, things like that. Use your forums, use people who are on your ECT provider course, but try not to draw the comparisons.
Yeah, absolutely. There's still a few schools out there, aren't there, that sometimes look to comparison as a way to kind of fuel progress and guess, you know?
Yeah, and all it does, it just breaks people down. It does nothing to aid morale. It does nothing to aid the team ethos that you want to create in a school. And just drawing those comparisons, I just think it's just such a negative thing. I'm all for celebrating successes, and I'm all for sharing good practice of the teacher next door might have done this really, really well. Brilliant example of collaborative learning. So let's go and watch tomorrow. But that's where it should end. You should clean the positives, but I don't agree with, making comparisons to have a negative impact.
I like what you said earlier about kind of them reflecting back and looking at all the successes they've had so far, about all the achievements, and even to get to university and to get into the course. And you know, a lot of obviously like B.Eds and stuff, and a lot, actually, I don't know, you'd be able to fill me in this. A lot of them, if not all of them, now have like placements continuously, don't they? A lot of the
Yeah,
courses.
it's completely changed since I went. And when I'm reading all the materials to try and get up to speed on how our ECTs got there, it's like, this is crazy.
They've
But
got.
yeah, it's completely different. And I don't think they're celebrated enough. They've given up 3, 4 years of their life to get to this point, and then they have maybe a bad first week, or not necessarily a bad first week, but a week where they've had to try harder in terms of setting out their expectations with the class and getting, the behavioural expectations right and things like that. So that bad or perceived bad first week should not deflect or detract from what they've achieved in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Psychologically, there's that sort of negativity bias, isn't there? That sort of hones our attention on the negatives and the things that we haven't done, gone, things that haven't gone well and things we haven't done well. And we don't have a positivity bias. So all of our successes and our wins and all the things we're great at, we always forget about them.
Go out the window, don't they?
And it was just, we're homed in on the evidence. And I guess what we're saying is look for the evidence of your wins, look for the evidence of your successes.
Like one of the pieces of advice that I put in the ECT group is write your wins down, how no matter how small, write them down. Even if it's like 3 out of 10 children listen to me for X amount of time, get it on piece of paper, because when you are having, a day where you're not feeling so confident, look back at it and it'll all add up really, really quickly, and it will shift their mood, So anything small that's an achievement, just get it down, write it down, so you can go back and reflect on it.
I love that. That's awesome. It's almost like a gratitude practice, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something that we use called our positive trios, and then at the end of the day, and no matter how bad the day has been, you need to find 3 positives. And one might be you managed to finish a cup of tea, or something silly like that. It's still a positive. And then 2 might be related to teaching. But if you get into the habit every day of having just 3 positives, 5 minute exercise doesn't take more than that. Over the week, you can see the impact you've had, and you can see your wins build up.
No, I love that. That's awesome. So with sort of for ECTs, for experienced teachers, for everyone, having a life outside the classroom is of course core to well-being. And we do, don't we? We talk a lot about workload and we talk a lot about stress management in some schools. And I know a lot of schools approach well-being still from an angle of like doing nice things like cake in the staff room and stuff, which, you know, everyone's got their own opinion on that. For me, I don't view that as a well-being action. I view that as something nice that people do. Do you know what I mean? It helps. Don't get me wrong. It's lovely, but it's not a well-being action in my opinion. But what we forget quite a lot is the person outside of the teacher role. And we wear all these masks, don't we? Teacher, parent, partner, all these masks, and then we're like, well, hang on, we haven't done anything for the real us, the actual person beneath all of that. So, for you, in your opinion, why is having that life outside the classroom so important for well-being?
I think it comes back to what I was saying earlier about being happy. The happier you are, the more energy you're going to have in the classroom, the happier your outlook will be, your mood will be lifted within the classroom. And I think if you've got, things that you can celebrate outside of the classroom, you can bring that enthusiasm and you can bring that feeling and that attitude into your teaching every single day. It also gives you a vehicle to start conversations with some of your pupils sometimes with things that you've achieved outside of school within remit, obviously. But they can see you as a person the more you speak about like your hobbies or your interests, again, depending on what they are. But the more of that relationship that you can build with the children, the more that they buy into you as well. So it has a knock-on effect on everything. Not only does, having a good sense of well-being outside the classroom lift your mood and make you happier, it also gives you a wealth of things to talk about with people, and it helps you to build up that in relationship with both your colleagues and the pupils that you teach as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love that. I think sometimes I've definitely had points in my career where obviously it's a paycheck. At the end of the day, it's a job, it's a career. But for me, at points, it was definitely more of a hobby. And there's one particular year in I can think of where my ex-partner moved to Africa for a year. That was subsequently the end of the relationship, but she moved to Africa for a year, and obviously what did I do? I just threw myself into work, like as you would. And that's the thing about teaching, isn't it? It's a bottomless pit. It will take all the time that you can possibly give it, and it can become a pat well, it is a passion, but it can become a hobby. And I know for a lot of ECTs that can sometimes happen, can't it, where it does start to, because we enjoy it, we do enjoy it, and some people love classroom displays and some people love organizational bits and bobs, which is brilliant, and each to their own. But I think, like you say, you have to have something outside, right?
It just snowballs, doesn't it? You need to be strict with like your cutoff point or the boundaries that you set or time limits and stuff, because actually you could get home and think, I'm just going to do this one thing for school, and before you know it, it's 10 o'clock and the night's gone, and you haven't done your washing, you haven't had your tea, you haven't done anything, and you haven't done anything for you. You haven't been for a walk or a run or a swim, because it just takes over, because it just consumes everything if you let it. And it's the kind of job where it just happens, doesn't it, if you don't be strict with stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So that kind of leads us beautifully on to talking about boundaries. So this is, I don't know, I've chatted to a lot of people about boundaries, and Annabelle from Teachers Life Work Balance talked about, sorry, Balance for Teachers, talked a lot about like guidelines rather than boundaries, which I thought was quite a nice perspective on it. They're a bit more flexible and a little bit less rigid for sometimes when you need that flexibility. But what's your sort of take on boundaries, and how can teachers sort of set them in their lives to sort of, yeah, fence off the areas they want to protect, but still, do a great job in school?
I think, teachers need to be really, really clear about their vision of what they want to achieve and their goals that they want to achieve. And when we're talking about boundaries, and you've just mentioned that they're quite really right, not religious, quite rigid. Some might be religious, who knows? But actually, if you revisit your vision and your aims each week, your boundaries can change depending on actually what's on your workload or what's on your spectrum that week. But I think the main thing with boundaries is that actually you need to know what your key priorities are. So you need to keep ahead of the, you need to keep a invested interest in what deadlines you've got coming up, so that you can prioritize your workload, and you don't do something that you're going to need 4 months down the line, but you're neglecting to do something that you're going to need the following week, and then the anxiety starts to build and you've got no time to do it, because actually you weren't ahead of the game, you didn't look at your deadlines, you weren't organized, so you didn't set that as a key priority, you chose something that isn't relevant yet. So I think having a clear goal, a clear vision for each week is key to being able to set, relevant boundaries. I think being able to prioritize things successfully in terms of what have you got coming up and what dates and deadlines have you got to meet, I think that's all essential in being able to set certain boundaries. Teachers have boundaries where they might have 2 days a week where they're home by 4:15, depending on what time school goes out, and again, depending on what deadlines they've got coming up. But it's having the confidence to do those things. So you might choose 2 days a week where you have an early finish. You might choose 1 day a week where actually you don't get to school till about 8, 8:15. That might be really late for you. Or you make an effort at lunchtime to go for a walk and leave the school building. So actually you're being present for yourself at lunch, you're switching off the environment that you were in, you're relaxing. So when you go back in the afternoon, you recharge. It's things like, blocking periods of time, like on a night. So you could say, right, Tuesday night, I'm part of a netball club. And every Tuesday, I'm not going to take any work home, because actually that is my night for me. Likewise, if you've got children, you might say Thursday night is family night. we're going to watch a movie every week or go to the park or something. But you have to protect that time. And that comes with having the confidence to do that. And then you get that by setting your priorities, setting your goals and your visions, being clear about the time that you've got, and just being consistent with that.
Yeah. No, I really like the idea of having that vision for the week. That's awesome.
It changes, doesn't it? We could say, oh, you know, you need to set out your vision for a year or the half term. But I know since we went back to school last Monday, by the Wednesday, stuff I'd planned had changed, because that's the nature of schools, isn't it? You can control what goes on in the classroom to a certain degree, but then you have other stuff thrown in. And this is what I always say about planning as well. When people say, oh, I've planned for the next 2 weeks, why? You know, why put that effort in? Because something's going to happen. Just do a base plan or a couple of days, see what happens, and then feed off that. So we should treat our boundaries like we would treat our planning, you know. Something else might happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like the idea of like push days and pull days. So we talk a lot about this a lot with clients, as you know, and I learned something new actually. I'll go into that as well, but like push days and pull days, when you've got so much going on at school, like your spotlight, if you like, might have to be focused on school a little bit more than you'd like for a few days, and you might have to really push with school but pull back maybe with something that you do want to do for yourself. Now, this isn't a pattern to get into, but it might be a one-off. It might, like parents evening or report writing, like great examples, you know, those sort of pinch points in the academic year. There will be times where you do have to shine your light on school rather than on you a little bit. So yeah, push days and pull days, given, you know, what's going on sort of thing. And someone told me recently about sort of proactive days and reactive days, where when you're looking at your calendar for the next day or whatever it is, and you're like, right, you know, for leadership, it might be, I've got all these parent meetings, and I've got this local authority thing, and I've got this MAP meeting or whatever. And when your calendar's really chock-a-block, you're sort of looking at thinking, well, that's a reactive day. So today I'm reacting to the things that are already planned, and I might have an hour or two where I can maybe react to something else. So I might be able to react to some emails, or, do you know what I mean? It's stuff that's incoming for you. Whereas proactive days would be your days where maybe you don't have a staff meeting, and if you wanted to, you could either, like, say, stay a bit later and proactively get on with work and, you know, some bits and bobs, or you could proactively put that afternoon aside to go home and do something for you. But I like that, because it's sort of using your sort of your time and your energy, you know.
And that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about using your time effectively for what suits you. Because, you know, there are some people out there who cannot relax and switch off from school unless they've done everything on their to-do list. Whereas there are other people who will think, well, I've done three things today, I've got two left, I'll do them tomorrow. But it's having the confidence, isn't it?
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It really, really is. So in terms of, you know, distilling all this down, if you like, is there kind of one takeaway from today's chat, or just from your work with teachers in general, that you would pass on, one piece of advice that you would pass on maybe to people who are particularly earlier in their career? You know, new academic year, like we said, a whole new generation of teachers coming through. It's a great time to share, like, you know, one golden nugget, if you like, or something that is quite poignant for you.
I would say for any, well, everybody really who works in education, you've got to make yourself the priority. You've got to put yourself first. If you don't look after yourself in terms of your well-being, so your emotional health, your physical health, your mental health, you won't be any good in the classroom, and you won't be able to do your job effectively. So you have got to put yourself first.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, isn't it? Because that's one of those things only you can do as well.
Yeah.
It's
you need to step up for yourself and show other people how serious you are about that. They'll buy into that.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole you treat people how to teach you sort of thing. Sorry, other way around. You teach people how to treat you.
Yeah. Because you are worth it, you know, and you're worth it in terms of how you are as a person and your emotional and physical health. You know, they should be your priority. And then when you get into that classroom, the children are worth it. So, you know, it all feeds together. The happier and healthier you are, the happier and healthier your relationships will be inside that classroom.
Yeah, it's a true ripple effect, isn't it? You know, when you're cared for and you're looked after, we always feel like it's selfish you know, oh, I'm putting me first, and we can feel guilty, but actually it's probably sounds cheesy, but it's the most selfless thing you can do, really.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, you know, selfish is a word that, you know, can cause so many arguments, and there's, you know, so many things lead off that word, but actually you're doing your best for you so you can have a bigger impact on other people. What's selfish about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you get many selfish people in education. It's not the kind of thing you can get into if you're selfish.
No. I think we need to take a step back sometimes and remember, don't we? We need to remember that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ruth, this has been so good. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us tonight. Where can everyone find you? Where can they come and see you? Where can they find you online?
Oh, they can find me online over on Instagram at Peachy Teacher Wellbeing Coach, or they can find us via our Facebook page, which is Peachy Wellbeing, and our website, which is also Peachy Wellbeing too.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you very much. By the way, I love your Instagram. I think a lot of the things you post are very poignant and very, you know, you get to the point, and I like that. You know, I think sometimes we can skate around things, and but you're there. You're saying what you mean, you know, you're saying it in such a straight way, which I really love. It's really good.
Thank you. That's lovely to hear. I do try, you know, I do try to be quite honest with the things that I post in terms of this is what you need to do if you want to get this effect. But I'm also quite mindful of, I don't want to tell people you don't need to do your job as well. So yeah. I try to balance right between that. But, you know, if you don't put yourself first, you won't be happy inside or outside of the classroom. And then if you're not happy, what's the point? We've got one life. It's far too short, and we need to be happy.
Absolutely. Ruth, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.